The following show is closed caption for the reality impaired. The Jerry Bader Show.
I want to open with a deep thought. I heard a phrase on the radio today. It's a phrase I'm sure I've used on the radio many times. Tit for tat. How come I can say that on the radio and it's not dirty? You can say tit for tat. And you know what it means. Quid pro quo, whatever. Yeah. Tit for tat. And then it leads to the burning question. What is tat? Where do you find it, and how do you trade it for the other thing? See, these are the big questions. Actually, I stole that from Dennis Miller. It's a joke from years. I'm just throwing that out there. I just heard it on the radio today. Well, most people think that's a dirty word. Yeah, Jason, not everyone's like you. That, not tat, the other one. Most people think that's a dirty word. Yes. It's not one I do. I've used the phrase hind tit on the radio. I think we've explored that far enough. I know. See, the fact that you want to explore it further, that's exactly right. It explains your little psyche over there to a T. We're going to get to Ukraine again today. A couple of pieces of pretty interesting audio to play for you. I don't want to beat it to death, but in terms of how it's being responded to is still news. And there's something I definitely want to get to this. We'll probably do it in the 10 o'clock hour. Now, as you know, and rightfully so, the Assembly Majority Leader, Bill Cramer, was ousted yesterday because of highly inappropriate behavior with women. It was unanimous, as it should be. While that vote was going on, it was learned that State Representative Dean Coffert, a Republican, who has a bar, and since he's owned that bar for 12 years, it's had a sign that says, men, no shirt, no shoes, no service. Women, no shirt, free beer, free pizza. Jason just laughed. Once the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel asked him about it, he had an employee immediately take it down. Was that an overreaction or the right thing to do? And now are Republicans going to walk on eggshells and be terrified of anything that could pass for innuendo? Well, I think it's an interesting question. I blogged yesterday that I thought taking it down was probably the right thing to do. But we're going to try to get to that. Speaking of taking things down, I was going to mention this, and now I'm glad I didn't, because I can do a full-blown topic on it. As I told you recently, I've watched all 12 episodes of Season 2 of House of Cards, the Washington political drama, thriller, whatever. I thought it was a disappointment. And that's all I don't want to give it away, because I know people will watch it, binge-watch it whenever they want to watch it. I get that. Now, this won't give anything away. This is not a spoiler in any way. There is a scene where now Vice President Frank Underwood, and if you didn't know that, now Vice President Frank Underwood is having a meeting with Native American tribal leaders, okay? And they're in this meeting room, I'm assuming, in the White House. And the tribal leaders come in, and Frank Underwood is being his phony, charming self. And there's a picture of Andrew Jackson on the wall. And one of the tribal chiefs says, will President Jackson be joining us today? And Kevin Spacey and his best Frank Underwood, South Carolina, acts, well, no, that was a terrible oversight. I apologized. George, take that down, would you please? And they take down the picture of Andrew Jackson. I think they turn it over, face down, is whatever. They just take it out of the room. I don't recall which. Now, I understood the reference because I'm a student of history. I thought, that was interesting. And how quickly the vice president's character So, oh, I'm terribly sorry. And I thought that would be an interesting little thing to mention. I mention it now because writing at Slate online, Jillian Keenan makes this case. Kick Andrew Jackson off the $20 bill. I'm going to read a good chunk of this to you, and I want your thoughts. My public high school wasn't the best, but we did have an amazing history teacher, Mr. L, as we called him, brought our country's story to life. So when he taught us about the Indian Removal Act and the Trail of Tears, Andrew Jackson's campaign to force at least 46,000 Cherokees, Choctaws, Muscogee Creeks, Chickasaws, and Seminoles off their ancestral lands, my classmates and I were stricken. It was unfathomable that thousands of Native American men, women, and children were forced to march west, sometimes freezing to death or starving because U.S. soldiers wouldn't let them bring extra food or blankets. It was hard to hear that the Choctaw Nation lost up to a third of its population on the death march. It was disorienting to learn that what amounted to ethnic cleansing had come at the insistence of an American president. Then it was lunchtime, and we pulled out our wallets and went to the cafeteria. Andrew Jackson was there, staring from every $20 bill. Really, they had 20s, huh, in high school? Andrew Jackson engineered a genocide. We'd been carrying around portraits of a mass murderer all along and had no idea. Andrew Jackson engineered a genocide. He should not be on our currency. Symbols matter. Many people, for example, are inspired by the symbolic implications of Jackson's path to the presidency. He was born 2 weeks after his father's death to a widowed immigrant mother, and despite his poverty and lack of education, reached the highest office in the land. That's a powerful story. So is the more precise telling of how Jackson climbed the American socioeconomic ladder. Jackson was the only president who worked as a slave trader, and he accumulated much of his fortune that way. In fact, Jackson later pursued his Indian removal policies specifically so that stolen lands could be used to expand cotton farming and slavery. Even in a historical context, our seventh president falls short. His racist policies were controversial even in his own time. After the Indian Removal Act only narrowly passed Congress, an 1832 Supreme Court ruling declared it unconstitutional. Jackson ignored that decision. In 1838, Ralph Waldo Emerson wrote a passionate letter calling Jackson's policies a crime that really deprives us as well as the Cherokees of a country. For how could we call the conspiracy that should crush these poor Indians our government, or the land that was cursed by their parting and dying imprecations our country anymore? Ironically, the biggest supporter of any campaign to remove Jackson from the 20 might be Jackson himself. He was a fierce opponent of paper money and the central banking system and would probably be horrified to see his face on our national currency. Leaving him on the bill as a form of mockery could be the best insult, but complicated historical slights don't translate. His face on our money implies an honor that Jackson's legacy doesn't deserve. Worse, it obscures the horrors of his presidency. This issue isn't merely cosmetic or a nod to a political correctness. Symbolic change and practical change have a symbiotic relationship. By confronting and correcting the symbols of our violent and racist histories, we prompt conversations about that legacy. Our conversations continue to affect marginalized communities today. This wouldn't be the first campaign to change a face on our currency. In 2010, H.R. 4705 called for Ronald Reagan to replace Ulysses Grant on the $50 bill. And in 2003, the Ronald Reagan Dime Act tried to bump FDR off the dime. Amazingly, those weren't the only recent legislative attempts to put Reagan on money. There were at least two others. If our government wants to spend time arguing about who should be represented on dollars and coins, it can start by booting off the man who championed a genocide. No historical figure is perfect, but we don't need perfection. In fact, it's a low bar to clear. We just need someone better than Andrew Jackson. Given that Jackson's image has been on the 20 for nearly 90 years, it might be appropriate to celebrate his opposite, Frederick Douglass, a prime candidate, both for his work as an abolitionist and for his campaigns on behalf of Native Americans, women, and immigrants. Osceola, a Seminole Native American, led a war of resistance against his people's forced removal from Florida. Davy Crockett risked his political career to fight against the Indian Removal Act. Ralph Waldo Emerson would also deserve the honor, both for his timeless writing and for his eloquent arguments against Jackson's policies. Personally, my vote goes to Harriet Tubman. If Jackson's humble origins inspire people, you can't start much lower than Tubman, who was born into slavery. Although Tubman escaped to Philadelphia, she bravely risked her life returning to the South, helping more than 300 enslaved people escape to freedom through the Underground Railroad. During the Civil War, she served our country as a nurse, armed scout, and spy for the Union Army, and wrapped up her heroic life by campaigning with Susan B. Anthony for women's right to vote. It doesn't get more inspirational than that. Andrew Jackson's legacy opened the door for Americans from all economic backgrounds to participate in politics. For that, he deserves our thanks. But let's not whitewash Jacksonian democracy. Let's elevate a more honorable American instead. Do you agree or disagree? 406-1360, 888-455-1360. Several emailers already believe she overstates Jackson's shortcomings. What do you think? 5 minutes from now, it's 9:18.
Follow Jerry on Twitter. Go to jerrybatershow.com.